I'm Manila Chan. You are tuned in to Modus Operandi. Tens of millions of people globally abuse illicit drugs of some sort, according to the UN. The United States is just 5% of the world's population, but accounts for 20% of the drug overdose deaths worldwide. Do these numbers reveal more to the story, or just how the drug trade has only increased despite more technology and intelligence to crack down on the sources? We'll talk to a man who spent nearly 30 years on the front lines fighting this losing battle on the international drug war. All right, let's get into the MO. The most recent available UN drug report from 2019, pre-pandemic, gives only a sad reflection of just how bad the global addiction problem has grown since its publishing. Using data up to 2017, the UN Office on Drugs and Crime, known as the UNODC, it reveals that an estimated 271 million people worldwide use drugs within the past year. Now, that count is 30% higher than the number from 2009. It also shows that global opioid users hit 53 million, which is up from 56% from previous years. Now, opiate deaths accounted for 2 out of 3 drug-related deaths, which were roughly 600,000 in 2017. In the U.S., opioid deaths have topped 100,000 in 2022 alone. Now, opium derived from poppies are used to make morphine that's used in hospitals for pain management, but also used to make heroin and fentanyl. The use of opiate drugs are on the rise in Africa, Asia, Europe, and North America, with Africa expected to see the biggest spike of 40% by the year 2030. Some 93% of the world's opium comes from Afghanistan. The global illegal drug trade averages nearly $700 billion annually. The USDEA, Drug Enforcement Administration, is tasked with busting the drug lords around the world and to stop this global epidemic. But many accounts from former DEA agents say America's top spy agency, the CIA, is responsible for the proliferation of most drugs around the world. Listen to this 1998 House Intelligence hearing with then CIA Inspector General Fred Hitz.
He's here today to review the report of the CIA Inspector General regarding allegations made in a 1996 newspaper series that the CIA was involved in the trafficking of crack cocaine to California during the 1980s.
I immediately initiated an inquiry into the allegations that stemmed from a 3-part series called Dark Alliance that was published in the San Jose Mercury News in August of 96. That series discussed the drug trafficking activities of several individuals who had been implicated in cocaine trafficking in California. As you know, the series also suggested that the Nicaraguan Contras, described as CIA's army, benefited from the drug trafficking activities of Ricky Ross, Danilo Blandón, Norwin Meneses, and others, and that these activities were responsible for the emergence of crack cocaine in South Central Los Angeles and elsewhere in America.
Now, one of those accusing the CIA of complicity in this deadly trade is a 25-year veteran of the DEA. Mr. Michael Levine is a retired DEA undercover agent and author of a number of books, including Fight Back: How to Take Your Neighborhood, Schools, and Families Back from the Drug Dealers. Mr. Levine, thank you so much for joining us. Now, you are the most decorated DEA agent in U.S. history, busts and arrests in the thousands. But at about 25 years at the DEA, you grew disenchanted with law enforcement. Now, you've been cited by press over the years that your frustration came from encounters with the CIA, that the DEA had conflicting goals from the CIA. Can you explain that to us?
Central Intelligence, premier goal, first goal in this world is anti-communism. It always has been, it continues now. And to gain that goal, to attain that goal, they will use the drugs. They will use drug trafficking. They will actually engage in drug trafficking themselves. And they've been caught doing that. We've caught them doing that, and for which they pay no penalty. They were caught by us as early as 1991 in the case of a Venezuelan National Guard general, Guillen, G-U-I-L-L-E-N, who flew into Miami Airport in 1991 with a 727 paid for by CIA, loaded with a ton of cocaine. The arrest led to the wide opening of CIA drug trafficking. I'm talking about them actually drug trafficking. Guillen would be a CIA agent. And he admitted that he was a CIA agent, or actually he claimed it during his arrest. And those of you who are really want to research this, I urge you to look up that case, G-U-I-L-L-E-N, Venezuelan National Guard case. You'll find a lot of materials. The case finally resulted in the head of DEA, Judge Bonner, facing the cameras on 60 Minutes and saying, there's no other way to put it. CIA are drug smugglers. What more proof would you need? Central Intelligence began during the cocaine wars, the alleged cocaine wars, supporting the anti-communist factions throughout South America, actually throughout the world, by promoting drug trafficking, using drug trafficking funds to pay for their operations, literally pay for their operations. Now, there's an amazing amount of proof out there. But the interesting fact that we bring to this day is that they are now still promoting drug trafficking in the form of the Afghanistan drug barons. Now, we know I don't think you can find, you have any trouble finding plenty of current news articles wherein the Afghanistan drugs are being trafficked throughout the world. Yet, try and find one case of one Afghan drug lord being prosecuted. No, you won't, because they're protected by Central Intelligence, not a Central Intelligence agents, but the Central Intelligence policy to protect them. Now they're the anti-radical faction in Afghanistan. They're it. We have nothing else. So you have DEA allegedly fighting drugs, heroin in Afghanistan. And again, it's one of the prime sources of heroin on the face of the earth right now. And no arrests, no prosecutions, no highly vaunted extraditions from Afghanistan of drug traffickers. And you have to ask yourself, why? How is that? How can that be?
Now, people hear the names of three-letter agencies, you know, the FBI, CIA, DEA, ICE, and so forth, and they assume law enforcement is law enforcement and that their common goal is, you know, busting the bad guys. But you've asserted that the CIA is different in that they've often initiated a lot of crimes, engaging in and even orchestrating crime rings like drug trafficking. Can you tell us more about that?
Let me say, first of all, very clearly, Central Intelligence is not a police agency. They have no power in the United States to conduct any police action whatsoever, or actually anywhere. They are not policemen. They're supposedly spies. They're supposedly, I don't know, you'd have to ask them, what do you guys do? Because what we see in Tom Clancy movies is pure BS. We know that the guy who's sitting in these meetings that you see in Central Intelligence, and the next thing you see is the same guy now undercover, deep cover. That never, never happens. Central Intelligence are spies, nothing more, nothing less. They're also paid by us, by our taxpayers, to go out and screw up foreign elections, screw up foreign operations in any way, whether the job that they're doing is good or bad, in my opinion, and in the opinion of a lot of DEA people, we call them the criminal inept agency. They're very inept at what they do. But when they screw up, because they're a spy agency, everything is hidden behind national security. You have no right to look for it. If you go now and try to find out, for example, whatever happened to Mark McFarland, the CIA officer who was running the operation, running the drug smuggling operation out of Venezuela, you won't be able to find a thing. It's all classified. So what does that prove? What it proves is they're above the law in this country. They're not a police agency. They're a spy agency, and they're above the law.
Now, it's also said that the U.S. played an outsized role in the early days of the opium trade, which is used in heroin and fentanyl. In the old days, it was Afghanistan, the Golden Triangle, which was Laos, Burma, now known as Myanmar, and Thailand. We know that opioids are a problem all around the world now. What can you tell us about the U.S. role in the opium trade, and what was the purpose of proliferating such drugs around the world?
In the early days, it was the years of the Vietnam War. During those years, I happened to be on an undercover, deep cover assignment in Thailand and Cambodia during that time. I was later assigned to follow something called the Shan United Army. Now, these were the an army in that particular zone of tribesmen who moved through the jungles carrying raw opium from the production place to where it was turned to heroin in Bangkok, around Bangkok. This organization was funded, run, protected by Central Intelligence. Then all you have to do is Google Air America CIA drug smuggling. And what you learn is that Air America was a proxy airline run by Central Intelligence for nothing more than trafficking drugs across Southeast Asia. Now, what was that for? For support in the war in Vietnam. That was it. Our Congress had stopped paying for that war. CIA wanted it to keep going. They funded it through trafficking drugs into the veins and brains of Americans and people all over the world. It was their choice. And there's no one that can argue against that choice. No one is in a position. No one I'm talking to is going to be able to do a damn thing about this. And I know that. So I guess I'm doing this for posterity because it's almost, no, it's not funny. I'm going to say it's almost a joke, but it's not a joke. I think that agency really has gotten us in terrible trouble, and God knows where else they're going because there's nothing to stop them. They run this country.
All right, more with Michael Levine when we return. Coming up next, if you thought America's Pentagon budget was huge, the illegal drug trade is a very close second. Next, find out if drug trafficking is actually a tool of the CIA. We'll discuss it when we return. Sit tight, the MO. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the MO. I'm Manila Chan. Retired undercover DEA agent Mike Levine is staying with us. Now, Mike, Today, the former Golden Triangle is a major producer of meth. The Mexican drug cartels are a major producer of other types, synthetic drugs like fentanyl. While it's true that, you know, the U.S. has plenty of homegrown labs for synthetics, a lot of drugs make it into the U.S. from abroad. The U.S. is only 5% of the world's population, but it has over 20% of the world's addicts. The last several years, the U.S. is hovering at about 100,000 overdose deaths per year. Why are Americans seemingly more addicted than other populations around the world?
It's a complicated answer, but it's one I can answer. I wrote a book called Fight Back. And in Fight Back, I researched the nations and societies and cultures that effectively won their drug war. Huge population of heroin addicts, for instance, in China before Mao Zedong took over. Most people who really have no knowledge will say, oh, well, yeah, he killed everybody who would not, everybody who was dealing in drugs. That wasn't the case at all. What he did was he recognized that this wasn't a problem of supply of drugs, as we tell our children. This was a supply of peer pressure, neighborhood, whatever it was that got you into using heroin. There were 40 million heroin addicts when Mao Zedong took over. Now, I'm not a political guy in any way, so I'm not spouting communist, as some of you idiots may say. It's just a fact, and it worked. He made it a policy of the government for each neighborhood or each community to be responsible for the addicts in that community. Each community was responsible for keeping them, getting them off drugs and keeping them off drugs. There were very few executions, but what they did was they recognized that by telling people that you're a victim of drugs, that the availability of drugs makes you a drug addict, which is what we tell our children, you are assuring that it's not my fault. The opioid companies put it on the street. I had to take it because it's on the street. What's the worst thing you can do? All the research I did said the very worst thing you can do is tell children that they can't resist, that the availability of drugs is the reason they take drugs. Well, it's just not so. The reason they take drugs is peer pressure. The reason they take drugs is curiosity. The reason they take drugs is something you'd have to find from each kid, but it has nothing to do with the availability of drugs. And the worst thing you can do is say the availability of drugs makes you an addict. Now, my book, Fight Back, was judged by the Swedish Carnegie Institute as the only anti-drug book ever to come out of America that made any sense at all. So those of you with people with drug problems in your family, I urge you to get the book. It's called Fight Back by Michael Levine. My research is in there. And I think you should at least find it very interesting. But what you stop listening to is that the opioid companies have somehow made your children victims of opioids by making them available. And again, that's the worst thing you can tell children.
Is it a bug in the system that these overseas drug operations boomerang home to the U.S., or is that a feature of the system for Americans here at home?
I was invited to speak at an international drug symposium in Paris by the French government. And one of the other speakers there was a Michel Chuzadowski. He was an advisor to the International Monetary Fund. He was a professor of economics at the University of Ottawa. We became friends. When did we become friends? When he, on the stage of this audience full of 500-600 experts and agents from all over the world, he said, if America stopped buying drugs, he says, it could conceivably cause an international banking crisis. That's how the drug economy has woven its way into world economy. So your guess is as good as mine. What the implications of that, some of you guys listening who may be economic experts weigh it, because I'm not an economic expert, but those words were chilling. I think they're very accurate. I think they're still accurate to this day.
And what role do illicit drugs play in the world of geopolitics? And would you go as far as to say that drug trafficking is actually a tool of the CIA to achieve certain geopolitical goals?
That's what I've been talking about for the last half hour. That's exactly what it is. Geopolitical goal during Vietnam was kill the commies, get them out. How do you do that? Support the drug trafficking opposition to them. Cut to South America during Iran-Contra. Goal of the CIA is get the leftists out. If you read my book, The Big White Lie, it's all about that. We were undercover, deep cover. We had penetrated the biggest drug cartel on earth at that time, and this was secret Senate, secret testimony before the Senate. And the first people to come out against us was Central Intelligence, try to destroy the case. They wanted to get the Lydia Gaylor government, what was a leftist government in Bolivia, which was then the chief supplier of raw cocaine in the world. They wanted to get her out of power because she was a leftist. Well, she was helping DEA bring down the cartels. So they fomented through their agents the bloodiest revolution in Bolivian history. The Coca, they call it the Coca Revolution. And they killed, raped, murdered all the Lydia Gaylor government. They were destroyed. They were out. Well, who took over that government under the CIA's protection? What they called the cocaine government. Luis Arce Gomez, he then took it over, and he was the minister of cocaine. It was a CIA asset.
Now, going back to Afghanistan, in the 1980s, Russia spent a decade there at war. The U.S. only recently wrapped up its 20-year campaign there. Both countries point to Afghan opium as the cause for rise in opioid addiction, specifically right now on the rise in Russia, Turkey, and Iran. According to a 2009 statement from Tim Jones, the DEA's attaché at the U.S. Embassy in Moscow at the time, Mr. Jones said this, quote, "Unless we work together and attack this problem as a joint effort, we're not going to be able to make the difference that we need to make." Now that the U.S. is, in effect, locked in a new proxy war with Russia, some even say a Cold War, what does that mean for the world of drug trafficking opium, since Afghanistan does produce over 90% of the world's opium?
It's just words that they have to produce to fulfill their bureaucratic jobs. It means Operation Burn Furnace in Bolivia was exactly that. You went in and burned out the coca leaf, just burned it out. Well, it was a success. Then the Bolivian people started starving, and we had to back out. And that's a fact. It was such a sham that I wrote about it in Fight Back. We won. Why didn't we keep doing it? No, because the fact of the matter is, too many people make a living. Poor ground scraping people make a living off of this. So what do you want to do? What's the point? Is some political purpose of making them starve? You know, this is tough questions, but it's the questions about reality is what it is. Fact is, we can do that stuff. When we did back in 1971, I think it was, or 72, we put the Turkish opium farmers out of business. We got them into President Nixon at the time, had a deal with them that stopped them from growing the poppy leaves and the production of, they were the prime source of heroin then. Immediately there was a panic in the U.S. Immediately what happened is heroin started coming in from other countries. Mexico became a prime supplier of heroin, brown heroin. It was so futile. It's kind of like sticking your finger in a dike to stop the ocean. You know, it's bizarre. And yet we spend billions doing just that. sticking fingers in bikes, just so we could say, look what we're doing. Look, you know, this is what we're spending your billions of dollars. Of course, a lot of it going to us bureaucrats in salaries. But I'll give you all the words you want to know. And that's what Tim and these other guys are doing. That's their job. They're bureaucrats. You know, I was a country attaché. I had to make statements. No, I don't know Tim. He's DEA, and I believe he's a country attaché or an official assigned to the country. So I know the job. I know what it is. It's a bureaucratic job. Yeah.
Michael Levine, retired DEA and author. Check out his books at michaellevinebooks.com. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you. It's really been my pleasure.
That is going to do it for this week's episode of Modus Operandi, the show that digs deep into foreign policy. I'm your host, Manila Chan. Thank you for tuning in. We'll see you again next week to figure out the MO.